hello, and welcome to The Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and in with me today is Candace Berthrong, former president of the Cache County Master Gardeners Program, and Helen Muntz, who is a horticulture intern with Cache County Extension. And we're going to be talking about a variety of gardening topics, but first we're going to start out talking about the Master Gardeners Program. I think I've been doing this program for how many years, and I don't think I've ever had that as a specific topic. So thank you both for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Master Gardeners, where did that program start, and what's it doing in Cache Valley?
It started in 1972 at the Washington State University Cooperative Extension, and because of the onslaught of interest in urban gardening at that time, the extension agent was overwhelmed with problem and questions, and so they developed a volunteer program and taught extensively volunteers who then go out and support the work of the extension agents.
So they're actually people that are going out, is almost like satellite extension agents in each county?
In each county. And it developed it through a land grant universities across the country and is now part of all 50 states. There is Master Gardener programs and even 4 provinces in Canada.
And how long has the Master Gardener program been in Cache County?
I think first class was in 2001, so late in the schedule, but going
here
strong.
Here now, less.
Yes.
And is there a Master Gardener program in every county in Utah?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So just to get started out, if someone wants to be with the Master Gardener program, how did they get involved with it?
They take a class that's 40 hours of class time, and then they volunteer for 40 hours in that following year or as they're taking the class to become certified. And then they continue to volunteer. And the mission of the Master Gardeners is to educate residents of their county in healthy gardening practices.
So let's talk about that education. And it is going to be different from, as we talked before the program, from California where you had first started out to here in Utah. So you've taken the program twice.
I took it because it's the science behind gardening. And each area is different. And it's the soil and the climate and the microclimates that we all have to be aware of as we garden in our own yard and in our own counties.
So how detailed does it get? Because I know when I interview people from Extension here on my program, it's just fascinating to me to find out why things grow this way, how they have developed over the years. And so it sounds like it would be something really interesting to do.
And I think the class gives you a taste of all of those areas of gardening, and then you know where to look for the answers or who to contact if you don't know the answer to pass on to the residents
of
the county.
So talk about a typical question that a master gardener might help with.
Having your soil tested and where to go about it so that you know how to amend your soil to make it grow things that you want to grow. And the idea here in anywhere is to grow plants that are native so that they don't take as much work when they're native plants because they're used to the soils.
So you said you'd take 40 hours of instruction. What type of instruction? Who's teaching? And when does that usually take place?
Usually in Cache County, it takes place the end of January through May or through the 1st of May. And it's an evening class from 6 to 9, one evening a week. And it's taught by extension agents across the county, across the state,
so
expertise.
I remember early on taking a 10-week course of gardening, and in that 10-week course, so this is back in the 90s, in that 10-week course, they talked about vegetables, they talked about fruit trees. I mean, each week had a different focus. Did this kind of take the place?
It did.
I'm sure.
I don't know what that program was, but that is what we go through. The soils, the chemicals that we can use for pesticides if we want to use that, but also along with that is integrated pest management, fruit trees, pruning, vegetable growing, and
turf and water management. They've got
there is a different
landscaping
class.
But it sounds like you're getting much more information than from that 10-week course, because it seemed like I only went for maybe 2 hours one night a week for 10 weeks. That's only 20 hours. So you're getting double the amount of instruction.
Right. And each and I know with vegetables and gardening, because it is a big interest here, we had two different sessions on that, which was great.
So, Helen, how do you talk a little bit about what your position is right now and how do you use Master Gardeners?
Well, so my position right now is a temporary horticulture agent. I'm a horticulture educator. We're kind of in between getting a new agent for Cache County. What I do with the Master Gardeners, well, I sort of support them, but at the same time, they're supporting me. So, you know, they have projects in mind that they would really like to see do to help reach out to the community, and I like to help them make that happen. And then also where I need help in different areas or I have great projects or ideas, I call on them for their support and their volunteer hours so that they can help out a lot. There are a lot of duties that I have in this position that you know, I do need a lot of volunteer help, like fair judging and some other things like that. But where the Master Gardeners have really stepped up and had the knowledge to be able to do those tasks.
So when I take vegetables to the Cache County Fair for judging, it's probably the Master Gardeners that are doing that judging?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, yep. Great. So this time of year, what are Master Gardeners usually doing? Are they doing instruction more than showing? It's kind of white outside.
Well, Candace would be happy to answer that. I'll just say they're planning and gearing up for springtime. We're actually going to be having we've already started a series of mini gardening classes, so that's starting in February. So they're kind of gearing up for these things and getting people prepared for spring and summer, and discussing what we have that we're excited for in the future and getting that lined out.
Okay.
Anything else, Candace?
No, I do. We have several programs coming up, and we are excited about them. The first one is February 27th, and it's seed selection and planting your garden, which is what we're all ready to gearing up for, because it's almost time to start planting your seeds inside for planting outside.
Well, I was already thinking, if I'm going to do any celery this year, I got to get that started, because those seeds take forever. But this is also information I've gotten over many years. The average person, and I get to interview extension people every week, so that's really helpful. Not everybody can do that. So this taking these classes is where you can find out this kind of information.
Yes. And on top of that, the extension has some great guides for use in planting your garden. One is a simple vegetable garden. It tells you when to plant and how difficult it is to plant and all the ins and outs of it. And these are great tools for all of us to have as references.
Well, I hope that you're finding this conversation interesting. If you have any questions or comments, our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. Or you can go online and send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. Or go to the Utah Public Radio Facebook page and leave your questions or comments there. Again, it's 1-800-826-1495. Candace Berthrong is former president of the Cache County Master Gardener Program, and Helen Muntz is the interim horticulture agent for Cache County Extension.
Yes.
And my guests here for the Zesty Garden today. All right, so just looking at this list of classes. So February, it's seed selection and planting your garden. It's 2 hours long, very minimal cost. It's only $2. What's the average person going to learn by going to that workshop?
That's actually being led by Brittany Hunter, who is an extension agent in Weber County. And she will tell us all about what the best plants for our area are and how to plan our garden and to make the best out of that garden.
Okay. And so then the next month there's native plant propagation. There's a couple of different workshops in March. Container gardening workshop in April, and beneficials in the garden. Who are they and what do they do? So it sounds like each one has its own focus. So as a master gardener, do you tend to specialize in a certain area?
I think you follow your own interests, and the Native Plant Prop Workshop is like the 15th year we've done this. And you go in, and it's a short class on plants that or seeds that we have available that we've collected, and then you go plant those seeds, and you take them home, and you plant them in your garden. And we have root trainers, so you walk away with about 60 seeds planted.
And it's pretty successful, apparently, if it's been around this long.
That's exactly right. It's a terrific energy involvement, but it's really you're there to do it, and it's fun. It's really quite fun.
How many master gardeners are there right now? And I'll just use Cache County as the example.
About 250 have taken the class. We don't have that many active, but we do hope they'll become that way.
And as you mentioned before, to stay active, you have to do at least 25 hours of volunteer work.
Each year. Yes.
And how much does it cost to take the Master Gardener program itself?
Cache County was 110, at least last year. I think other counties, it depends on the county how much they charge. Around 100, usually a little more.
Okay. And how do you find out about the Master Gardener program or to sign up for the upcoming training?
You can go to the extension agent office.
Of each county.
Of each county and sign up that way and register. I think they all have individual ways.
Now, you also have a website. Is there information from that website?
There is information on our website as well as the university.
Yeah, if you go to the USU Extension website, you can pick what county you're in and click on that and then go to the Master Gardeners, and they should have some information, whether it's updated or not. It should be, but that would be how you'd find more information from your county.
Now, with the Utah Public Radio webpage, if you click on programs and then drop down to Zesty Garden, you'll be able to go to today's program, which has already been posted. The audio, of course, will be posted a little bit later, but I have a couple of links. One is to Extension Publications, which we'll be talking about. And then also I've got a link to the Cache Valley Master Gardeners program. It's cachemg.org, where you can find out information about how to sign up for the Master Gardener program here in Cache County. But as we mentioned, go to your county extension office. Each county except Daggett, I believe, has a county extension office that you can go to and learn about their Master Gardener program. So who is the average Master Gardener?
That's a good question.
It is a good question.
It ranges in this county, I think, because more people are interested in the agricultural and the gardening part of it rather than the volunteering part. So I think the range is fairly wide, from the homeowner, which I think is where it's really geared towards, to the beginning farmer, because it does give you the science behind the gardening. It's quite an extensive program place to start in your gardening career, if you will.
So they're not typically retired or any particular age. It seems to be all over.
It seems to be all over.
Yeah.
And there are certainly retired people because they have more time and they can do that. And I think that's who we have active as our volunteers because of the time element.
Are there particular types of people that you're looking for especially to encourage to be into the program?
Yes, we would like to have people who want to volunteer because the mission is to help educate these residents of the county. We are active at the Gardener's Market. We have these various programs. We have the Alternascape Garden Tour, which will be this year on June 7th. And it's a self-guided tour to about 9 gardens. This year, again, on native and water-wise plants, just to show people that you don't need all of that grass.
So it's typically been toward like the end of June. So are you trying to get a different look? Last year, was it a greenhouse?
Last year was early, and it was to show how to extend your garden. So it was greenhouses and hoop houses and that kind of thing. It is true that the climate here is we have short growing seasons. So the longer we can extend that, the better off we are.
And how did you find that? Because it was quite different from what had been done in years before. I mean, with the Alternascapes tour, I've always loved doing this because it's given me ideas of, oh, I can plant that. Oh, I can do this or whatever. So last year was a little bit different. And how well was it received?
I think it was very well received. I think wherever anybody went, they learned something. We had full greenhouses. First Frost Farms is quite extensive gardening because they're the lettuce growers of our county, or one of them. And I put in a hoop house, and it was quite fun to experiment.
The big whole hoop house?
Over a little raised bed that I have. So it was only 12 by 5 feet. But it was interesting to see the process of how do I make this work, because the soil was still quite cold. And it's really the soil temperature that makes things grow or not grow.
I know whenever I buy a 1-pound tub at Sam's Club of the organic greens during the winter, I think I could be doing this myself if I just get in gear and get going. Because as I've talked to Dan Dross, the extension vegetable specialist, they're doing it.
They're doing it.
I mean, it does slow down during the very coldest parts, but those leafy greens are still going. And so we can do that.
You can put those.
The Zesty Garden is a production of Utah.
We can grow lettuces inside.
Yeah, great. That's true.
Our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495, or our email address is zestygarden@gmail.com. Part of your education also is to, we're in a drought, and there are always cycles of droughts, but I know personally I'm worried if I'm going to have enough water. I live on the end of a canal, so even during a good year, sometimes there's no water in the canal. So how do I flood irrigate my garden? Well, I may not be able to flood irrigate my garden this year. I'm probably going to have to put in a drip system of some kind. I might have to look at, okay, what am I going to plant? I may not want to do corn because of the amount of water that it takes to grow it. So how do you educate the public as far as helping them understand it can't all be Kentucky bluegrass anymore as far as your yard?
I think one of the questions is drip irrigation and watching water is quite the way to do it. But there are lots of pamphlets on how to save water. There's also just being aware of how we water and doing it wisely. And checking your irrigation system to make sure there isn't, because that usually goes on early in the morning. Has it turned? Is it broken sprinkler heads? Am I just gushing one area and not being effective and hitting the areas right? Am I watering my sidewalk instead of the garden?
And Candace makes a really good point that the very first thing is to really be able to understand your irrigation system. And then there are ways that we even rent out, they're called catch cups, so you can test coverage and that kind of thing from the extension office. And there are a lot of good resources online through extension as well, just on good watering practice, so that you're not using too much.
So what's it going to take? We're very much addicted to our water here in Utah. We're the second driest state. Cache County gets maybe a little bit more water than other areas of the state, but not much. What is it, only 16, 15 and a half inches?
I've heard less than that.
So, and it's probably getting less than that. We see what happens every year where there's less and less snow, and there's more moisture. When it does come, it's coming more as rain than it does as snow. So there's a mindset that's going to have to change. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to hit us all real quick, and maybe that's what's going to end up getting us to change. So as far as the Master Gardening Program is concerned, how do you think that change is – what are you doing now to help people to see that? And where do you think that change is going to come from?
Well, I would think that Alternascapes is helpful too, as far as, you know, now you're doing water-wise native plants, being able to show people how you can make your landscape look, that it actually doesn't look like a desert, desolate landscape. It actually looks very colorful, very beautiful, and takes very little watering and lower maintenance and that kind of thing. So that is a really great way to reach out. But I will say that you can only really target this part of the community through doing those things, people who are interested. Some people would just have their traditional mind frame. It's going to be hard to reach everybody in that way.
And maybe it's actually the price of water.
Maybe it is.
Until it hits the pocketbook.
Well, it usually is what happens. I think that so far this year, what we have 30% of our normal precipitation, which could affect us.
30%? I mean, that's a phenomenally low number.
Right. And I think California, who is now in extreme drought conditions, and is 20% of their normal. So we're close to that.
So what are they doing? Their water prices have come up.
Their water prices are quite high, but they're also going to be starting to mandate that no watering of lawns at all and no car washing and things like that. That's what they did in 1973 and 80, in the 80s.
And they've got a lot more population now than they did back then.
And they supply a lot of food to the country. And their regulation of the water on those in the Central Valley is scary for them right now.
Well, they were talking about there have been water conservation programs in, but I heard on NPR News this morning about how they were trying to get it so that the water being allocated for wildlife can be taken out of the San Joaquin River so it can be used to grow things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's
the water is a big issue across the whole Western United States, and it's all landing on the East Coast is what's happening.
Yeah. It's like, okay, would you please dump here your way over? The Zesty Garden is here for the entire hour. If you'll join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. You can also go to the Utah Public Radio Facebook page and post a question or comment there. And then again, call our 800 number, 800-826-1495. In with me for the program today is Candace Berthrong, former president of the Cache County Master Gardener Program, and also the interim horticulture agent for Cache County Extension, Helen Muntz. And we are talking gardening. It's time to get going and get things prepared and ready for this coming season. One of the things I wanted to look at just a little bit now before we will have a break, and then we'll come back and talk about some of these publications. What is the next workshop? What have you got going on? Anything in January right now that we can talk about? Do you have
January.
Any programs?
No, I don't think so. I think we start in February.
Okay. So when does the Master Gardener program itself begin? Is that the end of this month?
Well, for Cache County, yes. We will not be having one.
Oh, there won't be one this year.
There will not be one in Cache County. The closest would be in Ogden, although I don't know if they will allow you to take the course there and use your volunteer hours in Cache County. But that's what I would check with.
So go to Weber County Extension.
Yes.
To see.
Yeah. And the reason is because the agent is, they're trying to find a permanent agent. So they didn't have anyone permanent when they started planning the classes.
Do you know if Box Elder is going to have one this
Box
year?
Box Elder is not. I believe they just do it every other year.
Okay.
So this would be an off year for them. It's a shame. Candace would agree. We were hoping for some new
blood.
Yes.
Well, there's only so much that can be done when there's not as many people to
it's
work
true.
With. So.
It's true. But these programs that we have had have gone on for years and years,
yeah.
And so they are well accepted, and we enjoy putting them on. So it's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the second half of the program. We're going to take a brief break and then be back with the rest of the Zesty Garden, so stay tuned.
Waste not. Studies show leaking faucets and toilets account for as much as 14% of all indoor water use. That's 10 gallons per person per day. By replacing an old toilet with a new model, the typical household can save up to 21,000 gallons of water per year.
Waste Not is made possible by the Logan City Public Works Water Conservation Department. Information at loganutah.org/publicworks.
Welcome to the second half of the Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and in the studio with me today is Candace Berthrong and Helen Muntz with Cache County and the Cache County Gardeners Program, Master Gardeners Program, and at County Extension. And we'd love to have you join our conversation. Right now, we're going to talk a little bit about what publications are available through Cache County Extension. And there is so much.
There's
that you can get from Extension. And it seems like whenever I need specific help about some things, like a couple of years ago, I talked to Dan Drost about putting in my asparagus bed. I mean, we got the world expert on asparagus right here. And so, of course, we talked. But then a couple of weeks later when I went to application, like, okay, what did he say? So I went to the website, and there it was a publication on planting asparagus. It was perfect.
Yeah.
So I was able to get the bed put in. And part of the fun that I have is once I learn this, when people say, oh, like the other day, someone said asparagus, that's too hard to do. I said, no. All you got to do is this. And I was able to talk to them about it. So it's a fun thing to do and to spread that information.
Yes, indeed.
So tell me what else you've got on the Extension website.
Well, you know, just about everything. I like how you mentioned the asparagus. We've got this vegetable, fruits, and herbs book. It's essentially kind of, you go online and you type in, you know, on the Extension website, and you type in whatever you're looking for, and you'll come up with publications and fact sheets. And some of these books that you can get from the Extension office, like this vegetables, fruits, and herbs book, it just lists from A to Z all the herbs and vegetables you might be interested in. And they're all in there. They have two pages of information, and it tells you about the vegetable, how to plant it, what kind of soil, what kind of water it likes.
Let's pick one out. Let's just kind of go through
this.
It's garden.usu.edu is the main website, and everything kind of branches out from there.
Yeah.
So, see, I'm looking at this going, I have no idea I could grow wasabi here. So we won't pick on that one. So let's go to potatoes. That's page 109. And so this is really a collection of all of the small circulars that you'd see online.
Yeah, this one is. So we go to potatoes, and it gives you a summary. It recommends varieties, gives you specific ones and a description of each. And then it says how to grow. It tells you soil preparation, how to plant it.
I like that there are suggested varieties.
Yeah, that's very helpful because different varieties will actually do differently in our soil and our climate. So that can be very helpful with any one of these.
And then I'm thinking, all right, so I always like to grow one that's a little more sweeter potato, and then I like to have one that's more like a mealy potato.
Right.
So I've learned by experience, I love Yukon Gold. So I look on here, oh, that's a recommended variety, so I'm doing okay with that. So
great.
It kind of confirms what I'm doing. But if you don't know which varieties to get, then this will really help. And so do russets really grow well here? I've not actually tried them.
They do, yeah. Have you grown russets?
I haven't.
It's like we don't have the volcanic soil of Idaho, so maybe they don't get quite as big, but apparently you can. So it talks about soil preparation.
Yeah, and then tells you how to plant, how deep, how to space, mulching, the water it likes, the fertilization. And then my favorite part here is the problems that may come along with it. So that is just great information because if you do see a problem, well, you know what would be something common that you might see. So it will talk about weeds that would grow around them and how to control those and then other insects or diseases that might attack these potatoes. So it's very, very helpful.
And I've been quite fortunate. I've not ever seen a potato beetle in my garden, ever.
That's wonderful.
So, but flea beetles, on the other hand, are all over the place.
Right.
I like that there's also information about fertilization because I think what a lot of people do is they plant their garden and then take care of it as far as watering it and weeding it, but they don't really give it the fertilization it needs. And yeah, our soils have certain nutrients in it, but they have others that maybe these vegetables need to have that we could be putting in or adding. And I know with potatoes, you have to add usually side dressings of nitrogen in order to get things going. So, but this is a great publication. So this is $7, and it looks like it was put together in 2012. How new are most of each one of these publications within the book itself?
I think a lot of them, well, I have an older version, so these have probably been more, they're probably 2012, have just been revised a little, if there need to be a revision. Yeah, but these, most of them, I think, originated around 2004.
And it's not like these would need to be updated that often anyway, unless maybe there's some new pest management techniques.
Right.
I liked with the potatoes that it gives you not only how to control them with the pesticide, but also what to do if you don't want to use pesticides.
Right, yeah.
Which in this case is just pick off the potato beetles is the best management.
Sure, yeah. And there's a lot of different non-pesticide practices. But, you know, another thing, though, that we didn't mention is just how to harvest, and especially with potatoes, how to storage. So it also kind of goes into, you know, what you can do when you're ready to harvest.
And so it doesn't leave you hanging.
I mean,
you've got the potatoes,
right.
Now what do you do with them?
Right.
I was telling my wife just the other night, this is okay. She's trying to come along with me on this, and she had the onions in the warm storage and the potatoes in the cold storage. I says, we've got to get that switched. The onions go in the cold storage, but that's what we learned from the potato publication.
Sure, yeah.
And through the extension. So extension has a lot of wonderful, helpful information. Okay, what are some of your other favorite publications?
Well, so I didn't bring in, I like the... Well, a lot of them can be really useful. So some of them, I brought in this Wildflowers of the Mountain West, and this is a new one. And this is just great because if you're out hiking, you can look up these wildflowers by color in this book, and it gives you great descriptions helps you identify these. And some of them are actually, they have cultivars that are out on the market now that can be used in your garden, too. So I think that's kind of interesting, and it just shows the diversity of plants that we can actually grow here in Utah.
And it's small enough that you can take it with you.
Yes, yeah, so. It's a really nice size. And then the other one is just the weeds, the common gardening weeds as well. And Candace wants to talk about the gardening questions. But I like the weed book particularly because it helps you to know, just for home gardeners, to know what they're dealing with, you know. And so they can identify and they can understand the growth habit and how to control it and, you know, how much of a problem it can be in their yard or not. So it kind of really helps with cultural practice and the home and garden.
And curiosity, because when I looked at the book, I went, that's what that's called. So like,
yes.
It was shepherd's purse. And like that stuff, if I let it go, it dries out and it just binds up in my tiller and I've got to get it taken care of early. And so,
yeah.
But having a name for something, I don't know why that makes such a difference, but it's like, okay, I'm going to take care of that shepherd's purse this year, make sure it doesn't get going.
Yes, yep.
Okay, and there are not just gardening publications. There are publications for so many things. We've used, when we're canning,
right.
We've used some of the canning publications to help us know, you know, how long do we need to do our tomatoes. So what you've got something...
They also have on how to cook a turkey at Thanksgiving time.
Ah, geez,
and all kinds
about that.
Of great things. There is another a guide to common gardening questions, which really takes you through all the basics, again, on a general way of soil prep and planning your garden and variety
and,
selection.
And this is fairly new, isn't it?
This is, yes, it is. I'm not sure, but it's gardenusu.edu online to order. But it goes through all of the various things we need to think about in planning and growing a garden.
So this sounds like it would be something, it's really good generally just to get you started. And then having this vegetables, fruits, and herbs book gives you more specifics about each
plant.
Each one of them. So how do you know, right now I'm thinking, all right, so I need to get prepared for and planning what I want to plant and when. Is there something that would help me understand when I could plant things and when I should start indoors?
Well, you can find...
Is that inside the garden questions
it's
book?
It's probably inside. Well, Candace's little guide there, too, is a great tool for that. And you can get those in the extension office. And that tells you when to start everything. So you just turn it along, and I think, does it have the separate counties as well? Sometimes the timing is a little different in each county.
I'm just looking here on the back. I don't see the counties, but I do see this smiley face or... how easy it is. So if it's got a smiley face, it's easy or moderately easy to grow. If it has a face with, it's not frowning, but it doesn't look smiley. Brussels sprouts, for instance, is listed on here as one of those that might be challenging. Although, I don't know. It seems like I had really good luck with Brussels sprouts.
No, they're not too hard.
The deer really like my Brussels sprouts when they're leftovers.
Maybe that's why they're challenging.
So so what I would be looking for would be a planting guide. So this is a garden vegetable guide. It tells you how easy or challenging something might be. Planting depth, row width, spacing between, days to maturity. That's a really important one. Now, if a plant prefers slightly acid soil, that's kind of an issue around here. So what do you do to take care of that?
You know, there's not a real easy answer to that. The best thing, really, if it's a vegetable, pretty much anything, you're going to have to continually add. If it's acid loving, you're going to have to continually add amendments. So usually it's iron also and soil acidifier. But you kind of have to do that continually.
And as we're preparing for garden, and I know that you are not a soil specialist per se, but you talk with the soil specialists and get to answers that. So my most often asked question is, well, how do I take care of my soil? And I know it depends where in the valley you are. So let's talk about getting a soil sample done. And how really that's the best place to start.
Yeah, that is the best place to start. And it's simple. You choose a few different areas in your yard or the space where you're going to plant. So you've got your garden. And then you take samples spaced throughout that area. And then you kind of mix it up.
It's like how far, like if you've got a really large garden, do you do it from all over the garden area or...
You would have to go at least like 6 feet apart.
Okay.
And that way you just have a good variety of the variations in the soil. Now, it's a little difficult because soil can be very different, even 10 feet apart, how much it drains, just the composition, it can change. So that's something to keep in mind. You may want to have one or two different samples.
If all
samples.
Of a sudden you see that one sample that you're getting out changes...
Yeah.
In color and texture from another.
Yeah, if it were me and I noticed that substantial of a change, I would probably have two samples done instead of mix them together and find out. But either way, you're still learning, you know, how much nitrogen's in there, how much, what's the pH, and then what's the composition. And then so you take this sample and you get about 2 cups worth, and then you take it to, I don't remember the address, but there's a soil laboratory down on 14th East, is that, but
I think you can actually take them to the extension office.
Well, yeah, you take it to the office.
And then Evelyn takes care of it from there.
Well, actually now she likes people to go up and
really?
Drop it off themselves. Yeah, because you can there's free parking. It's not actually on the university. It's kind of across from the student greenhouses.
Mm, okay, so would you see this at gardens.usu.edu?
Yes,
you can go from there. Okay.
Yeah, so you can find the address. You can find there's a form you had to fill out, and it starts at I think about $14 for the simple test, and then can go up to I think like $45, $50 for a really intensive test.
And the simple test is going to get you what? What does it?
The simplest test mostly is going to give you just the nutrients that are there, nitrogen, potassium, phosphate, and it will give you the composition of the soil. I think that's generally it. But then they do include just suggestions what you need to add, what you should add, what's lacking.
So $14 is pretty cheap for getting that kind of an analysis.
Yeah, and it's recommended you do it every other year or every 2 years, just as your soil is changing. But yeah, it's helpful information because, you know, a lot of people will maybe be adding too much nitrogen or something.
So I was just going to ask, so why every 2 years? How does it change that fast? Is it mostly from what you're doing?
I think it would just, that's kind of the time limit. Yeah, because it can change that fast, especially if you're, if you are adding a lot of fertilizers or compost or manure, or whatever you do, it can really change fast. And it, again, will depend on the dynamic and the make of your soil.
I've noticed in my own garden, because I'm always putting things on in the fall and tilling them in, and of course you have to add, if it's dry material, like a lot of leaves, you have to add nitrogen to help break the leaves down and replace what the leaves are taking out. But I did a cover crop for the first time last year. Great. I've got some Austrian winter pea that actually germinated, and I'm kind of excited for this spring to see what happens when the snow melts and that starts coming up, to see how that changes the structure of my soil. Because I'm in Hyde Park, lower Hyde Park. We've got a lot of clay.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I've been amending the soil, and it has made a difference. But I want to be able to add nutrients back in at the same time. So it's kind of fun to experiment and see what works well for your own garden.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you have a garden.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you're applying all these same things that you're learning to your own garden.
Yeah, yes, I do. I would say I haven't had my soil tested. But our garden does kind of move around a little bit, and you know, as the compost pile moves, the garden moves, and it's been successful. But yeah, I haven't tried a cover crop yet. That's
well,
a great
I'll
idea.
I'll tell you how it works.
Yes.
I'll tell you how it works. So Candace, you've got a garden.
I do.
Okay. What kind of a garden do you have? Are you flowers, vegetables, both?
I'm converting my long lawn to a native xeriscape as much as I can.
And how are you
and
doing
a natural
that
habitat
and staying on top of it? Because that's what I want to do, but I'm so afraid that if I kill that grass, if I'm not right there doing something and making sure I stay on top of it, it's going to look like weeds.
Well, I put cardboard over my grass and mulch on top of that, and it's working most of the time, especially if it's not connected to other grass where the grass can grow under and come back up. But it's a great way of feeding the soil with a cardboard, because it kills the grass that's under there, which is adding the nitrogen back into the soil. And it really, with enough mulch, I have had to put mulch on top in certain areas, but it really is an effective way of getting rid of your grass.
And where do you
using herbicides.
Where do you obtain your mulch?
I get it from the landfill.
Okay, and that's another great resource.
It's a great resource. It's not expensive. You can get it delivered or you can pick it up yourself. And I have more to do. And it is, again, it's a great way of retesting your soil, because after putting cardboard and newspaper and mulch on top, that soil is going to change. It holds the water in. The worms are going crazy under there. So that's stirring up the soil as well.
And do you just do a little at a time?
I do.
Okay.
I do a little at a time. And it's a great way also, the cardboard between your rows in the garden in the summer is a great way to hold in your moisture and keep the weeds down.
So what kind of a mulch do you use? Is it like their medium mulch or their more fine mulch?
The medium or large is going to break down slower. So I would use that. And it holds that cardboard down as well.
And then you just plant within it after the grass has died?
I plant within it, or I plant first and then put the cardboard and newspaper around that and the mulch on top.
And I know this is a topic for another program, but did you have a plan that you started out with of what you wanted to do?
A little plan. A bigger plan would have been better.
A good plan.
And I think that's growing as I learn the microclimates of the land and how things are growing. As I observe what's happening out there, then there's more reason to change and move on with that sheet mulching. You can Google or look on the internet for sheet mulching, and it's a great way of
and that's sheet sheet and not sheep.
Right, sheet mulching, and it's like a lasagna of building up your soil.
Oh, I love that! So you've got a little bit of you've got your lasagna layer, you've got your cottage cheese layer, and sauce layer.
Okay. Right, and those can be transplanted with leaves or whatever, and that breaks that down and feeds the soil.
The fun part about having the plan, but then just doing a little bit at a time, is you can change it. So if you go and see a plant and how it's being used in the landscape, it gives you more ideas to keep going.
Exactly.
Well, we've reached the end of our time already. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. In studio with me today has been Candace Berthrong, former president of the Cache County Master Gardener Program, and also Helen Muntz, who is the interim horticulture agent for Cache County Extension. Coming up right now is the next Petals in Prose with Nancy Williams, and we're going to talk about bee vomit.
Good morning, I'm Nancy Williams, and today I'm going to talk to you again about honey. This is from Sue Hubbell's book, A Country Year, and Sue Hubbell is a beekeeper who lives in upstate New York. And this is about her collection of bees and what she does with them, and it's far more bees than I keep. I'm a beekeeper too, but Sue has hundreds of hives, and I have three. So I already think that collecting honey and bottling it is quite a big job. She's got it down to a science, and so I get asked a lot of questions about bees and gardens and honey in general, and is it hard, and should I do it? And here are some good answers about frequently asked questions in essay style about beekeeping and honey, which is the best part of it for us humans. She writes, "Every winter I promise myself that I will label an entire year's supply of honey jars, and every winter I don't. The job is a boring one, and I am clever about finding other work more important. I sell most of my honey in 1-pound jars. There are 24 of these to a case, and each one of them needs a label. I set up my label pasting machine on a table near the wood stove. The machine is so noisy that I can't listen to the radio, and although I don't mind because my public radio station has recently come down with a bad case of Dvorak, just thwip, thwip, thwip. The label machine doesn't have much interesting to say either. Thwip, thwip, thwip as the labels run through its rollers. Sitting there by the warm fire, pasting label after label neatly and precisely, makes me sleepy and dull. But I did get enough jars labeled for February sales trips, and now I am processing honey to fill them. When I extract the honey at summer's end, I store it all in 5-gallon, 60-pound buckets, stack them 4 high in the barn. By the way, we don't have that many of them, but that's how we extract it and store it, too. Those good plastic 60-pound buckets. This honey has never been heated, and so it has crystallized. I wish I could sell it that way because the flavor then is at its best, and the thick, crystallized honey spreads nicely on warm toast without running down your elbow the way liquefied honey does. But the buyers at stores tell me that their customers think something is wrong with honey when it's crystallized, so I have to melt it down and heat it before I can sell it. I put 10 of those 60-pound buckets into a hot box, which melts the honey so it can flow out of the buckets and into a pump, which pumps it up into an overhead controlled heating unit. This heats it enough to break down the honey crystals, but does not hurt the flavor. The honey flows from the heater down into a storage tank, where I let it stand to allow the air bubbles to rise out before I bottle it. Processing each batch of 600 pounds of honey takes one day. The bees made the honey from flower nectar. Bees forage as far as 2 miles away from their hives, and they find many different flowers. But in the Ozarks, their best sources are blackberries, wild sweet clover, persimmons, water willow, wild mint, and wild fruit trees, mainly plum, cherry, and peach. The nectar of the flowers is 80% or more water, and the sugars in the nectar are complex. To make honey, the bees have to evaporate the water and break down the sugars from complex to simple. When they gather the nectar, they suck it up through their long tongues and store it in a sac called a honey stomach. When this is full, they fly back to their hives and transfer the nectar to the young house bees, who spread it drop by drop throughout the hive in the honeycombs. In the process of collecting the nectar, storing it in their bodies, and transferring it to the house bees, the bees have added enzymes to the nectar, which break down the complex sugars into simple ones, chiefly dextrose, levulose, and sucrose. The water in the nectar evaporates slowly from the droplets spread out through the hive, but the bees speed up the process by fanning with their wings, setting up currents of air from the hive entrance at the bottom to ventilation holes at the top. On hot summer nights, I like to walk out to the beehives in back by the woodlot. At night, all 60,000 bees are at home in each hive. Most of them are fanning, and I can hear the hum of their wings long before I get to them. The air currents from the fanning of all those wings are so strong that when I stand in front of the hives in the dark, I can feel a draft swirling around my ankles. When most of the water is removed from the nectar, the bees cap each cell of finished honey with snowy white wax secreted in flakes from their own bodies. This finished honey has a very low moisture content, 16% or so, drier than the air. This makes honey hygroscopic. It can pull moisture from the atmosphere. That is why I have to store it in tightly sealed containers once it's extracted. It is also the reason why baked goods made with honey stay moist and don't dry out the way they do when sugar is used. When I harvest the honey and extract it at summer's end, I only take honey from combs that have been completely sealed with beeswax, honey that I know is ripe and will be flavorful. The uncapped honey, green and unfinished, will be thin and off-flavored, and I give it back to the bees. Last year, when I harvested 33,000 pounds of honey, at least 3,000 pounds of it was too green to extract, and so I returned it to the bees. I am fussier about this than some bigger commercial beekeepers, but since I can't compete with them in price, I try to produce very good honey instead. In another week, I'll have 6,000 pounds of honey processed and bottled. Then I'll load up the truck with part of it and head out on the interstate again to peddle honey and sleep in truck stops. Again, that is Sue Hubble and A Country Year Living the Questions. Be well, and I will see you next time.
The Zesty Garden is a production of Utah Public Radio with producer Shalane Smith-Needham and Brian Earl. To listen to past programs or get additional information about the show, just go to upr.org. If you have an idea for an interview, including guests or topics, send your suggestions to zestygarden@gmail.com. You're listening to Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 Logan, KUSK HD1 Vernal, KUSL HD1 Richfield, KUST HD1 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.